Borough Council Planning Board Minute, July 14, 2011.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. This is the regular meeting of the Highlands Planning Board, Thursday, July 14th, 2011. If everybody could please rise and join me with the pledge to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
As per requirement of Public Law 1975, Chapter 231, notice is hereby given that this is a regular meeting of the Borough of Highlands Planning Board, and all requirements have been met. Notice has been transmitted to the Asbury Park Press and the Two River Times, and notice has been posted on the public bulletin board. Roll call.
Mr. Mullen?
Here.
Mr. O'Neill is absent. Mr. Schulner?
Here.
Mr. Barla?
Here.
Mr. Roberts is absent. Ms. Peterson?
Here.
Mayor Nolan is absent. Mr. Stockton?
Here.
Ms. Ruby is absent, and Mr. Shields is absent.
Okay. But we do have a quorum.
Yes.
Okay. Looking at our agenda tonight, I see there are no motions for adjournment or and any other motions, so we jump down to new business, and there are no items there, so we jump down to item 7 on the agenda, approval of resolutions, and there we have 3 items to discuss. The first is the resolution based on the meeting that we had last month for supporting the bike path grant that the Environmental Commission talked about. And in your packets, you do have that resolution.
That looked pretty straightforward. I'll walk through.
Okay.
I'll second.
Offered by Mr. Barla, seconded by Mr. Schulner.
Yep. Any discussion on the motion?
Just a question. Regarding, I'm a member of the Environmental Commission, whether I'm able to vote on this or not. It's a question for Jack.
How many members are here?
Five.
That's okay. For the adoption of the resolution, do we have a majority? Were all 5 members, did all 5 members vote on this?
I
yes.
wasn't at the last meeting.
Not Ms. Peterson. All
right, so we have 4?
Yes.
Okay. Peter, you can recuse yourself because even if we're down to 1, you only need 1 person in the majority to vote in favor of adoption of the resolution.
Okay. I didn't want to. I just wanted to know whether I could. Or I had to.
Any other questions or discussion?
None for me.
Roll call.
Mr. Mullen, I'm sorry.
I'll abstain.
Mr. Schulner?
Yes.
Mr. Barla?
Yes.
Mr. Stockton?
Yes.
That's it. It passes.
Okay, and the resolution passes. Right. Next is the resolution for professional legal services. And in your packets, you do have that resolution there. Any discussion on that?
This is different than normal, is it?
No.
We have to do this every 6 months.
Okay, I'll look for it.
Offered by Mr. Barla.
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Schulner.
Any discussion on that motion? No. Roll call.
Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Mr. Schulner?
Yes.
Mr. Barla?
Yes.
Ms. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Stockton?
Yes.
Motion carries.
You're welcome. Next is the resolution for professional engineering services, and in your packets you have that. Again, it should be straightforward. And
go for it.
Offered by Mr. Barla.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Schulner.
Any discussion?
None.
Roll call.
Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Mr. Schulner?
Yes.
Mr. Barla?
Yes.
Ms. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Stockton?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Next, item 8 on our agenda, unfinished or adjourned hearings. There's nothing listed there. Same with item 9, hearings on new business, nothing listed there. So we jump down to item 10 on the agenda, and there are 3 items for discussion there. I'm going to take the review of the Highlands Business Partnership zoning recommendations as the first item that we talk about under this. And in your packets, you do have, I think there was a request to Mayor and Council, who referred that request over to the planning board for consideration to help them make their decision on any rezoning that might happen. Need a copy of that?
Which one?
And in your packets, you do have, from the business partnership, there's a, how many pages is it all together? Fairly thick letter report, and then there are some additional correspondence from concerned citizens attached to that packet for discussion as well.
So how is at this time doing?
How do you want to handle
subcommittee?
Well, typically how it's handled, right, is that we get the recommendation from mayor and council, and we weigh a decision based on our discussions about that request, and then reply back to mayor and council. And from what I understand, mayor and council's looking for us to reply back. I think at their by their August meeting, and that gives us some time to digest and resolve
yes, we can this matter. Yes, we've got a report of recommendations at the August meeting, which will meet their August meeting.
Right, and the way that it probably should be handled, being that we have that time frame, is to set up a subcommittee to review everything, have that subcommittee report back, or at least meet. Between now and our next planning board meeting, and then report back to the planning board with recommendations that we can turn into our final recommendations back to the council.
And then at that August meeting, have the report of the subcommittee, the board itself discuss.
Yes.
Members of the public.
Yes.
And then you take your action then and pass it on to the council before their meeting.
Yes.
We'll have a resolution ready that night.
And I can have a resolution ready for the evening.
Right, and then as part of this subcommittee process and digesting and absorbing this information, I think we also need to authorize our attorney and our
just like we did
board engineer planner
just like
to review it just like we did with the other ordinance change. That's right.
I have a question. I mean, just haven't had a chance to thoroughly digest that. We're just getting back, but looking at it quickly, it looks like it's addressing almost the whole town. If you had that in the ordinance for the former Highlanders site, isn't that basically a master plan revision? I mean, it looks like it's an exercise of looking at almost the whole town. So how does that differ than
the full master plan
revision? Than taking on a master plan revision?
I haven't dug into this yet, right. So I don't know.
And then the follow-up question is, then why would we do that? We had discussions in the beginning of the year about whether or not we were going to do the master plan this year and decided we didn't need to.
And
we just rezoned the downtown area a couple of years ago. So I'm trying to understand, like, why and the scope of this and how does it fit in versus a master plan.
Well, that's exactly the type of dialogue that should happen at this
subcommittee.
The why and the where.
Well, if you look at it, I mean, I read through the whole thing a couple of times. I was confused in a couple of areas, but the rezoning we did was really for, Bay Ed.
The business district.
Yeah, but what they're talking about here goes
the whole rest of the town.
It's the whole thing.
Yeah, Highway 36,
yeah.
Shore Drive.
The residential.
It's very expensive.
Do we have a resolution from the mayor and council rolling this over?
No. That's a motion.
And what we have, how did it get to us? They just did a verbal?
Yes, a verbal to refer to the planning board for recommendations.
Okay, so it's more of an open-ended thing. Yeah, okay. There's no restrictive guidance that's been sent over from the mayor and council, so you address what you think is appropriate or inappropriate. If you feel it's beyond the scope of what we should be considering due to you just said, you spoke about, then that's fine. If that's going to be the recommendation of the board, then that's the recommendation of the board.
Okay. Yeah. Then for the benefit of the people in the audience that might be here for this, when the planning board makes its recommendation back to mayor and council can take some of that recommendation, all of that recommendation, or ignore it completely and come to their own decision on the actual zone change. Sometimes it happens that they follow our guidelines and suggestions, and sometimes it happens that they don't.
Yeah, the board sits.
The decision is with them to.
Only in a review and advisory capacity. What the board does is non-binding on the council. A review of any proposed ordinance, any proposed district change, any capital review project, anything like that. They just get the recommendations of the planning board and they do with them as they see fit.
What I'd like to do next, then, I think, is entertain a motion to authorize our board attorney and board engineer and planner to come on board and start studying this.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. It's just the same we did the other one.
That's the way that we did the other one.
So. I'll make the motion.
Okay, so we have that motion. And
I'll second it.
A second. Any other discussion on that? No? And then
Mr. Mullen?
Yes.
Mr. Shulman?
Yes.
Mr. Parla?
Yes.
Ms. Peterson?
Yes.
Mr. Stockton?
Yes. Okay, and then the next thing I'd like to do is form this subcommittee to start studying the issue with the intention of meeting shortly, definitely between now and the next planning board meeting, and discussing it and start formulating recommendations.
I'd like to be on it, but I can't because I'm going to be out of country.
Okay. Well, we can't go.
Yeah, right.
I'll be on it.
I'll be on it too.
And anybody else is not here, can you get a hold of them?
Maybe you can't go beyond, you can't have a quorum.
It has to be four.
Okay.
No more than four.
Well,
so we have Mr. Mullen.
Mr. Stockton.
Mr. Stockton.
And Mr. Shulman.
And Mr. Shulman.
So far. And maybe one more.
Yeah.
We'll invite somebody. And then what we can do when we have our subcommittee meeting.
I'll do it.
Good girl.
Enthusiastic.
I know. Right, so now we have our third subcommittee.
Yeah, I'll be on the subcommittee.
Let's have a motion by the members of the board if they accept the concept of the subcommittee, A, and B, the members that are just the volunteers.
Offered by Mr. Mullen.
I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Shulman. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye.
Subcommittee is formed, and we should set a date for that.
The only thing I don't have is a
calendar.
Can you get me the calendar? Sorry, guys. You have your keys? You have your keys? You do? He's going to get the calendar. We just want to make sure the availability of this room before we set a date.
And then does this subcommittee meeting get published?
Yes.
I will publish, and the public can attend and listen, but you're not required to have them participate.
They don't participate at a subcommittee.
And with regard to the entity that prepared this document, they should probably be present to make some sort of presentation to the board and answer questions.
I think that would be
at the next meeting, certainly. Yeah.
Subcommittee.
No, they should make this. They should really make their presentation at the board level.
Tonight,
well, whether it's either tonight or the next meeting, that's up to you.
I think tonight we could have that information.
Well, then go right ahead. Okay. If that's what the board chooses to.
Okay. Should we wait for the calendar or jump into that?
Want to just get the calendar set and then
we'll set the date.
Okay.
This way
we don't forget.
I'm also get a lot of it.
That's Larry Colby for the record.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you talking about?
We think we're going to open it. If you just wait a minute, Larry, we think that we're going to open it up to have you make a little discussion.
We're going
to just a couple
meeting.
Minutes. What we're trying to do is get the meeting date set.
I'm not opposed to making time for my own time to come and discuss it with anybody, was there any questions or anything else. If that's permissible, Mr. Belkay would be attorney. It is a lot.
We're just waiting for the calendar. We're actually trying to follow certain Robert's rules and procedures on that.
When the questions would be when we open it to the public.
Next Thursday
night?
Next Thursday?
I can't.
Okay.
Is the 21st.
Friday. We have to announce the meeting tonight. Can we email each other and then I'll notice?
I'm sorry?
Yeah. Yeah, you don't, yeah, you
instead
can.
Instead of us trying to squeeze it, if we're not sure of schedules, do you want to, the committee and me, work on a date, which I'll notice for?
Sure.
Yeah.
And then we would notify, are we going to notify the HVP?
Notify HVP, notify the public via their website, publication in the newspaper, and posting on a bulletin board here at Town Hall.
And,
okay.
And if interested members of the public are here for this purpose tonight, then know that you should at least check in on the municipal website and the municipal bulletin board here in Town Hall for the specific date. But in the next, I guess in the next few days, we're going to settle on a date for the subcommittee.
And even though you won't participate in the subcommittee meeting, it's good to have go. Because you hear the board and you hear the members talking, and you may be able to take notes and say, wait a minute, they're missing something that I meant. And then when we have the public hearing, you can always come back in and say, I was at the subcommittee meeting, I heard the board members discussing such and such. My comment was I intended this to be this, not that. And so it's always good, you know, you can get a lot from listening as opposed to just talking. So it serves a good purpose.
And to get ready for that subcommittee meeting, maybe now would be the right time to bring up the members that are here from the Highlands Business Partnership to talk about the rezoning request.
Okay, let's get folks up, get them sworn. Okay, please raise your right hands. So I'm going to swear the testimony you're about to give in this matter is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do. I'd also like to know if the other member of the committee is supposed to be coming, Mr. Phillips. What was his name?
Jim Phillips,
I'm sorry.
And please state your names for the record.
Lawrence Colby, 44 South Bay Avenue, Highlands.
Okay, and give us your affiliation with the business partnership, how you came to be here before you get into the substantive aspect.
I'm a member of the board,
okay.
And I was assigned to a committee to do something to stimulate some growth and look at what's going on, try to change something.
I'm the president of the board of directors, and
I can't figure out how to shut this down.
Also serves with the members of the Economic Development Committee, Larry Colby, Jim Bullum, and Jim Phillip. Also at the request of our council liaison, Rebecca Kane, and Mayor Nolan, also to come up with something.
And both,
stimulate.
And both of you have been authorized by your the partnership to come and make the presentation.
There was a vote taken online, and there was a vote taken at a meeting. And
good to go.
Authorized.
Thanks.
Do you want to go through it page by page, or do you want
to? However you'd like to do it. It's, I know.
Basically, my input points. With this was my time that I spent on the board, people I grew up with. Al Marker, Mike Kovic, different people served on the board for long periods of time.
Right.
My own experience talking to other people when it comes to the history and some of the other things involved in there. You know, they were an integral part of that. And some of it's my own personal experience, but really kind of limited in that way. I just figured we had a find out where we were to get to the next step.
Right, and the history behind the borough, that's
right.
That's
good, right?
It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, it's
an
oral history, but
if anyone has questions on
if anybody would like to start with a question too, that's fine
so
also.
The yesterday portion, we broke it up into three yesterday.
Does anybody have any questions on the history?
Just page two, the gas moratorium, I'm assuming, it's the second paragraph to the bottom, that there was a moratorium remained in effect until the mid, is that supposed to be 1990s?
80s.
That's 1980s?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
During the early 70s till mid 80s, is that what you mean?
It might have been 86, 87, but it was a long drawn out
piece of time. Means up right here, because we said they are the 70s till the 80s, but then it said it remained in effect. Did it remain into effect until
to the 19? It should be 1980s.
Gotcha.
It happened somewhere in the.
Thank you, Jim.
Just before the last bus, they allowed it to go again. That's basically the way. It was. Yeah, 1980.
I remember it.
Yeah,
I was there. I remember it well.
And
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I was
where were the stations for the train and the ferry in town?
Well,
or ferries?
Well, as far as the old ferries, there was one on South Bay Avenue, right where I live, actually, the Albertina tied up there. Then there was the patent dock right across from where the Sugar Shack is. There's a dock you can walk out on. That was a pier that was utilized. I believe some other spots on Shrewsbury Avenue were utilized. Where the natural depth of the water was, they came in. And when you say, you mean the older steamboats, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, right. You mentioned this is the preliminary form of transportation.
Yeah.
The rail,
as far as the rail goes, it went along Shore Drive, but it had like a lot of informal stops. Informal stops. It had one at Gravelly Point or Waterwich. It had one at Miller Street, where they would, and they had one at South Bay Avenue. But they'd also stop a lot for the kids that could get out to go to school. They used to take that to go to school in Atlantic Highlands for some years. The high school was in Atlantic Highlands, and all the students would ride the train. So, Jimmy White just told me the place was designed for horses and not for cars, and I really believe he was right. You know, when it came to the density on how it was.
Yes, let's get the Please raise your right hand. Solemnly swear a testimony about giving this man the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
James Phillip.
Okay. And give us your quick affiliation with the business partnership.
I own Doris and Ed's Restaurant and have been a member of the business partnership since it began.
Okay. And you are authorized to be here by the organization?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did you have a purpose in mind when you set out this? What was your thinking in investigating the ordinance to the goal of what?
Well, basically, I looked at it kind of holistically. I didn't look at it for one particular thing. I felt in the past that was a problem. They do the zoning spot change here, the zoning spot change here, and I just felt, look at it from everybody. I thought everybody should have a plus in this or be looked at. I don't think any zone should have been ignored. And we're basically not rezoning. We're asking to allow different uses within the zone. I don't know how that falls legally. But I didn't set out with anything other than what was there, how did it get there, and how can it change. And some of my personal experience was, especially when it came to Bay Avenue, was it was very little. If you have a small town to a certain point and have three divisions of what you can do in that town, hinders people's ability to sell it for the most part. I mean, I had an issue with mine where they basically said, you're permitted. 2 years later, they said, you're not permitted. But that eventually worked out. But the main problem was Bay Avenue is just too long for the population and flow of the town. You know, the only, as I get on later on, the only real development that took off here was the residential development.
I'm looking at the step before that, not the solutions that Bay Avenue was too.
No, I just started off.
But the idea of, I'm in the Highlands Business Partnership, I'm trying to create commercial growth in town, I am trying to fix all the problems.
Well, I'm in that, I'm a resident, I'm a property owner, I looked at it from all those perspectives, and not just from one. So, I could say I looked at it from many different things. You know.
So it's for the general betterment of town. These
correct. Businesses. I mean, the business is a big part of it because, but I mean, generally, making sure people can afford to live here and want to live here is very important to business. So if they don't want to live here and stay here, then anything you do on the other side is futile. And there was some problems with what I point out here when we get to the other part. Well, let's finish. You know, this and we'll move on with that.
Can I answer a little bit of that too on behalf
sure.
of the board members?
Sure.
One of the things that the entire board focused on when we had our special meeting on May 25th and the committee that met to put this together for a couple of months was that we looked at where the disposable income was coming from currently through whether the Shop Local program or just trying to encourage people. We looked at our absentee landlord problem. We looked at creating a walkable community. And like Larry indicated, the residential portion of Bay Avenue is so large. And due to the flooding, a lot of us felt that in order to create the need for, let's say, to attract a nail salon, a hair salon, those kinds of services that people would need, we needed to create more of a walkable community that people would have disposable income in those residential or mixed-use properties, and also to work towards bettering, trying to fix or improve the absentee landlord problem that we have here.
We pay. So
a lot of those things were taken into consideration that if we created the community, if the community, warranted more of those like Marina on the Bay type properties that people had, we know where a lot of our customers are coming from that patronize the restaurants and that, use the businesses that we have. So we felt if we had more of that, it would warrant someone opening some of those other services that we really need.
In short, we wanted to bring a better economic base to the town. And we found that the people who currently live in at what we know as the condos are a stronger economic base and more attractive for the businesses. And that was one part that was looked at. We also, like you said, looked at the problem. We have a lot of substandard housing that attracts less than stellar consumers and uses a lot of municipal services at times. And it occurred to me that we basically were preserving our worst buildings. It was the city, I said, we were preserving our slums. You'll wind up having a non-conforming use of a piece of property, and the guy buys it, he can only keep it non-conforming. He can't do anything without a use variance. And the problem with the use variance is they're always iffy. I mean, they can often be overturned. You have to show a hardship to get them. And it also discourages people from coming to the table. So we picked out some zones that we thought we should look at. And that was one of them. I mean, we got an opportunity. We know how it worked. Years ago, when all the condos were being built up, the thought was they're going to fill the schools up. They're going to take over the town, mm-hmm. and they're going to take all the municipal services. Well, in the end, a lot of those people you hardly ever see because they're constantly working. Some of them are retired, but they do spend their money in town. They tend to be local shoppers. They tend to be convenience oriented because they don't have time to go other places. We did find one section of town that we felt didn't need any change, and that was the Waterwood section, except on the Bay Avenue portion. And we felt that worked just basically fine,
right.
And that didn't require any looking into. And that was basically developed as a planned community. If you went back to that, that was part of the community up on the hill, Monmouth Hills, I believe, owned all the way to the bottom.
Right.
And, that was the reason. And the same thing, I'm here. I mean, I know people who live up on the hill and can barely afford to get by in their homes anymore. And years ago, we gave use variances to people to allow them to have an owner-occupied unit, and they were able to save their house. In the same respect, by allowing something like that, you allow younger people to come in and be more affordable. I mean, the first obstacle we looked at is the fact that there's a huge amount of non-taxable property, 30%. Everybody here pays for 3/3, but there's only 2/3 paying for it. So, I mean, you have that problem, that's not going to go away. So you have to be kind of creative on how you deal with it.
But we're not overburdened with open space, though, at the same time. So these are.
I'm talking about taxable space. I'm not.
So you're talking Huddy Park and Veterans Park and
I said in this report, a lot of those open space parks is what makes the community appeal to a lot of people and improves our quality of life in that. And I'm not saying to do away with any of them. I'm saying that we have to be more creative in our taxable base where we have it, because we're on the edge of being an unaffordable community for a lot of people.
But at the same time, you're sort of going two ways. You're trying to increase rates. You're trying to get the tax rate up, and you're trying to make it more affordable.
I'm not trying to get the tax rate up. I'm trying to take a piece of property that's at a poor use and get it to its highest and best use.
No, but you're talking about increasing the rates in town.
Well, that's the only way this town can exist. How else do you?
But I mean, how do you do that and maintain affordability?
Well, basically, one way is on the hill where you have a situation where you can have an auxiliary apartment in, and you're using a piece of property that, at this particular time, is doing nothing. One example is.
Single family houses
Excuse me?
But on the Hill, it's all middle class to upper middle class, single.
We didn't change anything on the Hill but the fact that we didn't recommend.
You're recommending two family houses, that would kill the property values.
I don't.
Up on the Hill.
I don't agree with you, and I'll explain to you why. The taxes is what kills the property value. My neighbor two doors down pays $17,000 a year. Okay, that begins to be a huge problem. I'm not saying two family. There's a big difference to that. We're saying that owner occupied, make a mother daughter legal. Right. Yeah, these exist.
Mother daughter is different than a second apartment that they can rent to a non family member.
We're saying take that and make it owner occupied and let them have an auxiliary apartment when they leave.
That's a two family. I mean, this is semantics. A mother daughter is very specific in that it has to be a family member.
You know how many people in this town are related to each other? Basically, everybody's going to be somebody's cousin. Okay? And all I'm trying to say is all these mother and daughters exist, and we don't get the benefit of them.
But increasing the density increases the demand for services, which makes the taxes unaffordable. So I'm not really getting that to increase the density.
Basically, an apartment would cover the taxes. Almost any apartment up there would cover...
For the owner. But for the rest of the residents who have to pay for children in the school, you're doubling up.
If you read further, you would see that we specified a small apartment, and we specified the owner live in a larger apartment. Which just, you know, I mean,
I don't imagine most people up on the Hill, especially ones with the more expensive homes, would want their neighborhoods to have two-family houses.
Are you familiar with Hartshorne Woods?
I don't imagine the homeowners up there.
Well, I'm saying, you're familiar with like Hartshorne Woods, for example, Hartshorne Drive.
I just don't, my personal opinion, I live on the Hill, I would not want
two-family
housing.
I'm just trying to give you an example of what we're looking, if you go down Hartshorne Drive, almost all those, you're allowed to have two houses on it. They're million-dollar houses. But that land would have been cut up and subdivided if that break didn't exist for those folks. Almost every house along there, you got 3 acres, but you got to have two houses because one pays the taxes. So by saying it's two family, not everybody's going to do it. I'd be shocked if more than 15% of the people do it. But if you stop somebody from having to leave town, I mean, Mike lives in a two family house. He's up on the Hill. That's an equal two family. We're just basically saying you have all these mothers and daughters that are illegal. Get the tax dollars from it. Get the sewer bill.
You're already getting the tax dollars from it.
To a point. But if you have somebody renting it, if you have an illegal apartment, we're not getting the tax dollars.
But then that's a coding violation, well, and that should be...
You're saying make it a mother-daughter and allow it to continue that way. Well, we don't reap the benefits of that.
Well, that's what confuses me, is that there's a statement in here, we know that these units currently exist. Yes. However, the town is losing money because they're not legally reported. Well, if we know they exist, why aren't they legally reported? I mean, I have a two... We live in a two-family. My house is two-family on Portland Road.
But there were several
since
on Portland.
We moved in 1985. But so whose responsibility is to get these things legally recorded?
Well, it's that would be the code enforcement officer, in my opinion. But
so why isn't anybody talking to him? I don't understand.
You wind up in a situation with what Mrs. Peterson said. This is my cousin. Okay, so go away. My cousin. You have a common door. I just thought this is an option that would, like I said, allow some people to keep their homes up there, that have enough land, that don't have a problem with parking. And owner occupancy rental is a lot different than non-owner occupancy rental. You know that. I mean, you can only, you know, that's a problem with that. But that was one of the recommendations
that
we made.
That becomes a huge administration
problem. It becomes the same enforcement issue.
Well, no, because you're required to have a CO, and a CO brings income to the town. A landlord registration brings income to the town.
Making sure that these are owner-occupied. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you get a CO when you sell a home. When you get a resale CO, you walk in and say, okay, this is it done. This apartment's over with, okay? When it's not owner-occupied, it's a one-family. It reverts back to it. This is an idea, okay? No. This is more of why I thought maybe when we get Wendell Smith or somebody in, if we had a look at it, because in creativity-wise, he came up with some other things in my history in the past to deal with stuff that wasn't on the board. I was just trying to offer some flexibility. And I don't live in the Hill, and it could be a lot of people have a problem with that. It could be a lot of people need it. But I just thought not to consider it and not to consider every zone would be wrong.
It seems to me that the overriding thing is to increase density, therefore increase revenue to the town, and the businesses will prosper as a result of this. Is that a fair statement?
That's part of it, yes. If there was a market for single-family houses throughout the town, that would be great too, but there's not. The tax rate prohibits that. And the demographics of the town do. But yeah, that was a strong consideration. And the fact that I looked around what worked. You go to the shores, there's no negative at the shores. I don't think there's any negative at Marina on the Bay. I don't think there's a negative at Bay Point. I do think there's some negatives with the flats that exist in town at times because they wound up being investor-owned. We didn't want that. We wanted to have a point that would be targeted for owner occupancy. When you have, like, years ago when the garden apartments converted, that was a problem. You buy 3-4 of them, rent them out, and you'd have all kinds of problems. We didn't want to see that. When you lose a certain amount of land because you're in a floodplain right off the bat. So here you're picking up a parking space by allowing it to be here, just like the house that was built next to the Chinese restaurant. It's basically, you know, fit for that particular one. A lot. And that's where, you know, we looked and said, there's no problems here. There's a minor amount of police calls. There's usually one or two people living in there as opposed to families. That's the reason why actually for years there were all two bedrooms because the town was afraid they'd overload the schools for a while. We didn't have enough people in school. And
you're talking about the size of the apartment. Is that, am I reading this right?
Yes.
The size of the apartment should allow for a modest one-bedroom apartment.
Correct.
Which would be 650 to 700 square feet.
I just copied the ordinance, I think, with that. I didn't know if you could, if it would be.
I guess, I think there's an ongoing discussion about getting more people to try and solve the residential units to solve the problem with taxes in town and to make it more stable. I think that there, with residential development, comes the need to provide services to those residences.
If you
in a commercial development, the commercial the entity doesn't put people in the school, takes away its own trash, for the most part, provides for its own security. And I mean, there are incidents where the police are going to these things, but they're not defenseless. They have.
Basically, that's why we have the vacancy we have. We don't attract anything. We're not going to. The problem is, you want to put a business on Bay Avenue, you want to put a jewelry store in. You think you're going to insure that jewelry store? You want to put a car dealership in? You want to put a professional office space? You lose that ground.
But wouldn't the money be better spent to put it into a flood program that would make those spaces less problematic? And you would be making an overall general improvement.
You got to sell it to an insurance company because I tried and it didn't work. That's the problem with that. And you're in business, the insurance company is your partner. That's just the way it is. And if you want to have any value of an inventory, that's a big problem to try to have that. And if, you know, it basically looked at us, it hasn't worked. This has been going on since 1970. They've been boarding up stores. In 1964, actually, they've been boarding up stores. The only thing that helped us, believe it or not, was the federal government came along and said, you can't have people living on the ground floor anymore. That was a big help because that took all the storefront conversions out in most of the town. Up to that point, Then we looked at some of these sites and said, well, you have not just, you have like a 6-family, there might be 12 students in school. Now, if you go to Shore Drive, I think there's 2. You'd have to look at it deeper. If you go to Marina on the Bay, I'm sure there's no more than 4 students. You're not big service users in that. They're generally not populated like a house in that respect. And that's been what's happened here. Through the years, and that's the way, you know,
where I think you look at the history also that we've had a town that had larger single family homes and inns. They took those down, they put up condominiums, and I think that if your theory was right, we were creating many more homes, much more density of full-time residents, and I would say that would have had a beneficial impact to our town in the past, and it didn't seem to have.
If those condos weren't there, I wouldn't want to venture to think what our tax rate would be. Add them all up, Pete. You're good at that with math or an architect. Add them up, find out what the total taxable rate is, take out of the town, and see how what that would do to support the rest of the town. Because we don't have a big police department, really. We should have the same cops we had then. You know, as far as garbage goes, that changed. And I must say, for the better, and I didn't agree with it when it was happening, but it, that did change for the better. But if you went and took all those condominiums, you took Widmore, took all them places out, you're going to find nobody can afford to live here. It would just be a community for other people. You push out the middle class. We have a, you know, that's one of the issues with that.
And we're talking about reusing some of those vacant existing parcels, like the Gimpy's, like the M&R Mechanical. Those were some of the properties that we had in mind with residential, you know, to create more disposable income. Also, a majority...
Well, that M&R, get back, that was a big problem in my mind. Because an ex-councilman told me they had it solved, a garbage company was coming in there. Okay, it was zoned for that. You can open up a garbage company there today. There was somebody who wanted to put dumpsters in there. It's a construction use, and that's what they wanted to do. I'm like, you're out of your mind. You want, oh no, it's good, it's a business. Well, you want diesel trucks? I mean, that's one of the reasons that later on we said this is not good. That was about the only thing, because when you wind up being a secondary business district, you wind up with secondary businesses. For a long time, this town was loaded with machine shops.
Right.
And light industrial and all that other type of stuff. And, you know, that wasn't exactly a benefit either, because the cops were always around. There was always, you know, problems. And we just wanted to have, like I said, a strong economic base, not just for taxes, but for the business and for the general safety of the town and for the well-being of the town.
You just mentioned that you thought it'd be appropriate to put housing in the M&R location.
Yes.
And I'm surprised that as a business group, you would want to give up the potential for commercial development, at least on the ground or second floors, of spaces along the commercial
side. It came down to that eventually, I think it would balance out. But if you have too much inventory, your inventory is worthless. I mean, you're dealing with a situation here where you have a vacancy rate probably somewhere around 70%. Or you have a non-conforming rate to be the same. Because you have too much inventory. If you're going to buy a car, and there's 300 cars on the lot that are the same, you're going to keep bargaining. You're going to realize this guy's stuck with inventory. Or if you have a whole aisle of peanut butter or the same product, you're going to realize, I get a better deal here. There's nobody willing to come in. That was the only professional building we had that's vacant. And it doesn't stop there. It keeps going. And there's some businesses that are unique. I don't know if Mr. Dowdy left there.
No, but my point is to give up permanently frontage on Bay Avenue to residents seems not a particularly good thing for developing a business.
Well, except when you deal with the fact that those people are going to utilize businesses and spend their money here. That's where it comes from. That's an economic base where those people aren't going to drive to Red Bank all the time. They will go to bars. They will go to Dorsonets. They will go to Wind and Sea because they get. These people know that from their credit card sales. It used to be bars, restaurants dealt with primarily tourists. And as times change, their thing closed. I mean, they still get a good part of it, but it's small compared to what it used to be. So if you have this empty business space, sooner or later, you're either going to wind up with a use that doesn't work. I mean, and the inventory doesn't help. Boarded stores don't look good. And you have to basically go where there's a possibility to do something. It's not been a short time. It's been 40 years.
One of the things that the board felt was that, we tried the, we're not going to have a main street like we all would love. I think all of us work towards that goal, whether it be the boards, everyone, the residents, the business owners, because Bay Avenue is far too spread out with residential homes. We're not gonna, obviously ask people to leave their homes to turn it into a business when we can't even solicit those services due to the flooding. Many of us can't leave our buildings at high tide. So we feel ideally, yeah, it would be great, but we need the residents with disposable income that will warrant the hair salon or the dry clean or the services that we don't have that currently.
But where will you go? Where will you go if you have residences on Bay Avenue?
Well, there's another thing too.
We're not saying entirely.
Well, eventually,
but on Bay Avenue.
Yeah, it sounded to me like you were
it's a commodity, is what I'm saying.
You were going to open it up to more uses, and one of them was residential. And I can tell you, residential development will happen, and it'll happen continuously, and then you won't have it. Because residential was so much easier to do, there's a bigger market.
Eventually, this is not a permanent thing. That's why you're going to have to change this from time to time. And when it gets lopsided, if it gets to that, but at least get to a point where your businesses are worth some money. I mean, where you don't have vacancies in the whole town literally for sale. The other thing we did here is we kind of look, one of the problems I've had through the years with condominiums is they tend to be on a government on their own, and when they first came here, they basically said, we're going to pick up our own snow, we're going to have our own lighting, and then they passed the law and it all changed. Like 20 years ago, they started subsidizing the condominiums. They also get to be like a lobbying group. You're fighting, you know, 15, 20, 24 people, often controlled by five or six. That's why we went with the fee simple here in that respect, because there is no municipal add-on for that. They'd have to face the street. Okay, there would be no paying anybody back for any services. They have to shovel their own property. You wouldn't be dealing with a block of people. And I've seen them come into town meetings and, you know, talk about their dumpster and talk about, you know, why can't they have their snow plowed? And I remember when those places were built and they said, we'll plow it ourselves. But the legislature changed that, and they did, what's the word for that, when they repay services to them? The town pays condominium services money every year. Okay. And there was a name.
Reimburse our electric and snow removal.
Snow removal, electric, or just some other things in there. With fee simple, that's not done.
Yeah, I love that single family attached stuff. They did that down in, I want to say Avon and Lake, what's now Lake Como. It's beautiful.
And with all due respect, Peter, maybe you're right. Maybe there's some parts we got to go back and look at. This is, in my idea, I looked and said, this is the only way I think it's going to go, because I see, like, the hardware store was a thriving business. It's not so thriving anymore. The real estate winds up being worth more than almost any other business around here. And it gets to be, even where I am, I won't buy my building that I'm in, because I don't want to deal with the tenants up there. And it's a decent price right now. But I want people, when I rent the place, I want people to want to live there. I want them to walk and say, I want to be here. Not I have to be here. This is the only place in the world that will take me, and I can move in here. And, you know, that's when we looked at some neighborhoods like Miller Street. That was used to be a commercial district. Azalina Food Chain started right there. And that store is still an apartment, but it's still a store building. It's not a residential building, other than its use is residential. Gertz at the end, the same thing. That gentleman, you can make good return. You can make 12, 13, 14% of your money on some of them lower end scale things. And most people do, but they don't live in town. And that sends a message there. I mean, you know, I do this, and I live in town, and I deal with it on a constant basis. But it's rare that happens. And, that's one of the issues that, we hope that some of those people, you give, like the Monmouth Housing Alliance just bought a piece of property in town. How they bought a piece of property in a floodplain, I have no idea. I guess they don't get federal money. But they'll continue to do that. They'll continue to come and buy their houses and put people in there at 25% of income, which is great if we didn't have a fair balance. We have more than enough, I believe, of our share of that. And, you know, same thing on Valley Street. You go down Valley Street, First Aid Station, there's an old store across the street. Across the street from Mr. Francis' house used to be a store. I think your place used to be an inn. He's on the waterfront, which is a little bit different. That one house was a church at one time. It was a cemetery there. Hmm. I mean, it was basically different. But I think by allowing somebody an option to get out and put something better, it's an issue. Like when we made our recommendations for Fifth Street, for instance, we basically said, take 100 feet or 75 feet and say, this is for the public. Extend that Miller Street beach down if you can get a developer to do that and zone for that way. Go from Miller Street down. And if the people want to sell, two things I think are unconscionable. I don't like eminent domain. I think that's an uncomfortable way of doing it. I think that if somebody wants to sell, they should have the right to sell. They don't want to sell, they shouldn't sell, at least not when it comes to for another developer to come in. That's how I, you know, basically feel about that. But if somebody's invested their life in the town and they want to leave, it comes time to sell, you want them to get the best bang for the buck, and you want the town to be in the best position to do something with that. And that's where that came from.
You pointed out a couple of streets, a couple of areas. Are you talking about for the downtown? Mixed use for the whole downtown, or are you talking about specific
I'm
areas,
talking,
neighborhoods? Or?
Wasn't mixed use there. What we said on Miller Street and Valley Street was to allow single family attached and on Fifth Street.
So sort of like row houses. Not specifically, but like sort of those condos, those side by side.
Basically like Marina on the Bay.
Like
which
almost like a brownstone effect in New York or something like that.
Yeah. I, well, I wouldn't say brownstone.
Yeah, I mean, not made of brownstone.
But I think there's two other issues that come to mind there. I had been told that the borough was going to consider tax abatement in some of, possibly. And to me, you know, I'd like to see some kind of architectural basis, because exactly what you said scares me intensely. So I know you can't always have
a... What, a brownstone scares you, like a beautiful neighborhood in Manhattan?
Yeah, not here. Boston, this isn't Manhattan, okay? That how I love it there, and I spend a good amount of time there. But I just don't think that on the waterfront, you'd want to have that. Plus, I don't think it would be...
What I'm worried about is just the other borough in Manhattan where they built...
I agree with you.
If there's a ground floor parking, there's definitely three levels above that for living, and you're creating, I think, a very close community. Walk down Reno on the Bay and walk down any other street, Waterwich or other streets in town, where you have views of the river and you can see out, and it's a whole different feel.
Well, I agree with you on the issues with density, and that was one of the things that we said that have to be discussed in that part. And you don't want small places either. And like I said, you know, I don't think you want flats. But as far as, you know, Marina on the Bay is, I did that project. I mean, I have some intimate knowledge. It was a condominium that went belly up, and we re-subdivided it. We came in and got a major subdivision from the board, and it's worked since then. It's maintained its property values. On the other hand, of course, the street did too. Little Billy Shea did, but. Doesn't take anything from the town. But as far as the density goes, you absolutely have a point. But when you have a building like GERS housing eight people there now in what is literally dangerous, I mean, it's the corner across from Johnny Hughes. There's an old store there.
Oh, yeah.
And
Miller,
and he walked in and offered that for a fairly reasonable price. But it's a dump. I mean, you're not going to get anybody desirable to live there when something is that poor. You want to at least have something at least close to code. They were closed down three times. But when you give somebody no option, if they say tear this down and you can build one family house, sorry, it sounds great, but it's never going to happen. Not when a guy wants $700,000 for it. It's not gonna.
Can I ask us something else specifically?
One of the other things that's really important that we forgot to mention that we took into consideration is HDP has always used our design standards that were adopted by the governing body back in, I don't know how long ago. I know they're old, but they're that nautical. They were done, you know, with the nautical seashore town. And, you know, maybe that's something that might have to be tweaked or something. You know, we really want to encourage the borough and the boards to use when taking things into consideration.
How much weight does the board have on that, Mr. Shepard?
On what?
On design standards.
Design standards.
If you have a theme.
It's part of our zoning ordinance.
Yeah, if it's in the ordinance, then the applicant should comply with the design standards.
Because something happened in Atlantic Highlands that got a lot of people upset. That was the only reason I'm bringing that up. Are you familiar with the building on First Avenue? Somebody got an ultra-modern approved building there. And we're placing burnt down, I guess, so we can't get involved with the design standards. I think.
Well, if your ordinance has specific design standards, they should be followed.
Okay.
And one
it's
other
like
thing.
Any other site plan issue.
I think they're in the master plan, but not necessarily.
Within the ordinance? Okay.
They're then, attachment to the zoning ordinance.
Oh.
But I don't think it's they deal with architectural character so much, or at least not specific.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe they could be, you know, something.
I just think the abatement.
Right.
Yeah. Other than that, if you don't have any specific provisions within an ordinance, you can't tell somebody how to make their building except in redevelopment zone. But if, like Asbury Park, Ocean Grove section, and that's actually part of Neptune down that way, Bradley Beach and the like, they all have design standards and part of the application review process for site plan or subdivision or any construction is that you've got to comply with the design standards.
Well, that's something we would like, and that we gave great thought to. And
that's what I was trying to say, that we really
I didn't know if it was something you could do, or if the abatements was a way to get people to dance to a design standard.
If you make it part of the ordinance, as long as the borough council adopts it as part of the ordinance, and somebody that comes in has to meet the ordinance. I haven't looked through it.
That is part of.
But if that's part of your ordinance, then they have to comply with that.
And then just one other thing before your question, because I'll forget. Another thing that we kept discussing was how, in some of the things Peter was concerned about businesses, the kind of businesses, we're really very limited to the kind of businesses we can attract here. We think when a lot of maybe zoning and planning in the past, so many people shop online now, everybody shops online, that has become really a very big part of, you know, people with disposable income. So again, the kind of businesses we can attract, we really need the residents that need the restaurant, the hair salon, the dog groomer, these kinds of shops that would last. Otherwise,
stuff that you can't get online.
Stuff, you know, otherwise we're going to find ourselves, you know, in the same situation with vacant buildings. And we feel that a lot of that hasn't worked in the past. So we're just thinking something more flexible, you know, may help us. So, anyway.
Okay.
The online.
This is my question. The this report went into Nolan and Council on June 9th, and I see Rafael Lee is on your board, and then there's a letter from her son on July 5th,
correct,
where he's talking about the height thing again. Now, we addressed this when we rezoned Bay Avenue, and we heard their objection, and we agreed with them that we wouldn't increase the height in that block. So is your board taking a contrary view to that?
Well, actually, they were involved in the input. What we basically said is that they could have more height go up and put some parking underneath there, their building in the end.
So you
but I wasn't aware of that when I did it. That was my goof. If I would have known that that was there, I didn't know the overlay was there. But that particular piece of property is the only piece of property on Bay Avenue that's not in the floodplain. So I probably should have reworded it saying that the property is within the floodplain, because that's little corner there, I think, is the only piece. If there's something else, I don't believe it exists. They're worried about their view. I said, well, I just didn't realize that that was the case. But one of the issues.
So what are you saying? I'm confused.
Well, right now it's being built there. Well, she abstained on the vote. But I said to her, well, you know, this is the way it is. You're asking to change it. I wouldn't see that a major change. It's minor, and I think I kind of goofed there in that part, because
height zone in 38 or more.
Yeah, I think I would just say, when you don't lose land in the floodplain, it makes sense not to have it. Right.
We would like to keep it the way you already addressed, as you indicated. Right. However, like Larry said, the committee overlooked that. And at the same time, the only reason we didn't change it after we submitted, because we realized afterwards that the board already addressed it. We didn't want to appear like we were recommending any kind of spot zoning or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So we just figured you would address it at the table.
And when she was talking about the past master plans, there was a thought in town in the 70s that everybody was going to buy Bay Avenue and knock everything down and make Cumberland Farms. This was really the thought, that you're going to have strip centers. This was actually what they said. This is what, you know, you need to have parking. And besides the Lurie family, it hasn't happened again. You know what I'm saying? Cumberland Farms came in, knocked the gas station down. But even their signs, they changed, because they thought it was going to turn all the way over. You know,
the other question I had regarding, you know, what I want to, since I'm not going to be here next month, or part of the subcommittee, but I'm also looking at this letter addressed to the mayor and the council from N.J. Fisher. And five questions there, and I was wondering how anybody on the board would like to address that.
I spoke to Mr. Fisher last time. When I was doing it, at that section looking at it, I felt, and the board felt, that why should we restrict these folks to stay in that zone if somebody was going to, if there's possibility of them selling to an adjacent property owner, I didn't want to see them have to give a use variance. But if these residents didn't want it, I certainly wouldn't want to thrust upon them in the same way. And I was looking at it, well, if that piece of property wanted to expand and those folks could have sold their homes, fine. If they didn't want to sell them, they can sell them. You don't have to sell them. There's no mandatory anything. It was just a market-based thing. And I didn't kind of get a clear answer from Mr. Fisher whether he and I said, look, if I was investing in that piece of property, I'd sure want the most amount of uses possible because you're already living next to a marina. You're already living in an area, so you're suffering from it. So at least when you go, you have an opportunity to make, you know, something there. And they're here today, and I did speak for him at quite some length. Maybe it'd be a good time to have them speak their piece.
You'll have a chance. We're following the procedures. Right? What that procedure is, they're making their presentation. The board and the board professionals get to question them, and then after that, it'll open up to the public.
If anything comes to your mind, feel free to email me. I'll return it. I just didn't notice last time it mixed up or something. If anybody ever wants to meet or have some time, wherever, I would certainly make time. And I'm sure other members of the committee would too. Because it just gets to be a lot. And you read it again, you see something different. You know, and you say, I shouldn't have did that. I shouldn't have put that there. But sorry, Mr. Mullins.
You've mentioned some developments in town that you thought were successful. One of them was this Mumford property that's at the
single family
home, which was a permitted use and in accordance with our zoning, and I think probably very, very successful. And there was a market, and they sold relatively quickly.
I agree. I just don't think that there's a piece of land like that left that would happen again, especially given the current market, what's going on in the current market. And we have sold some houses in town. I mean, the house behind Cumberland.
Well, if you're looking at then not necessarily individual development, you're looking for developer-based development.
Well, actually, on that side of the street, we didn't make any recommendation for anything.
No, but I mean, in general, you're not looking for the town, which I consider fully built already, to be developed in a single user fashion. Like, I bought my house, fixed it up, and moved in. You're looking at it as somebody coming in and assembling space. When you say there's no more land available to do that, you're looking for sort of development type
consolidation of properties. Is that what you're? Yeah, some places, yes. Not the Waterwood section, not the Shady Side section where you're speaking of. There's no need for that there. But there are certain places in town where we basically have pretty poor housing, and it would really help them maybe not have that housing there anymore. That's why I said Waterwood. Or we said Waterwood should stay the way it is. The same thing with, they used to call that Shady Side and Sunny Side down there. That's not an issue except along the waterfront.
But the development of single family homes, Ben Muffer did two up on the highway too. Mm-hmm. These are legitimate developments, and I assume achieve the goals that you're looking for in terms of bringing buyers in town,
or
whatever it is.
No, that was perfect. If there was more of that can happen, you should allow that too. I wouldn't say prelude that, but you've got to do, I kind of go with the forces of the market right now. That's, it happens in town. It happened on Bay Avenue. Somebody built a single family house. You built two in your neighborhood years ago. I mean, Mr. Britton built a couple through town. One's being built on Huddy Avenue. That's where we left, not Huddy, Seadrift. And one just got sold behind Cumberland Farms, which I think was good news, because from what I understand, a little less than 300,000. So that was an indicator they were right next to Cumberland Farms in that area. That was, to me, that can happen, but there are some places it can't, because the non-conforming uses that exist in most of those places are. And I'd rather walk you around town and spend some time with you, and you know, and basically get your ideas and my ideas and get together on that, because this way we both know what we're talking about. And then it goes the same for everybody, because this is an ongoing thing. And these are some of the things we have here. But I'd like to show you some of the specific properties we were looking at. There were some pictures in there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you had those.
Right. This I guess this thing that I'm looking at is the Highlands Business Partnership Says submitted to Borough June 9th, 2011, and it's a series of
that's more specific.
102 pictures from around the borough.
We got to pay for it ourselves, so we only
so we only have one.
Is this document available online, or those images?
Online. I think you can get a disc if you'd like.
We can give you a disc. Would that be okay?
Just something electronic.
If we give it to one member, we should.
Give it to all. Okay.
Can we get multiple discs?
Well, you can burn discs here, right? We can give you one. You can burn it from there. Fine. We'll do that.
$2, but I think.
I mean, if the board wants to pay to have one of those made for everybody, that's fine too. Or if he wants, you want to burn discs here, we'll bring the ones.
Well, certainly would be beneficial for some of the committee members.
I agree.
To look at it before.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think we can give you electronic, and we'll get an answer.
Problem is, some people have a problem opening those. The only reason I'd rather give you the disc, because when we email them, when I get emails, it doesn't open. I'd rather give you the disc and let you look at that.
And there is a second part to this whole recommendation. Mayor Nolan attended a November Board of Directors meeting and requested that we take the time to look at all of this and maybe come up with some of these ideas, because when we're putting together, and it's our goal for late 2011 and early 2012, we're going to put together an investment toolkit if the borough does do some of the tax abatements and some of the updates and stuff, and put together a package that we can send to developers to try to attract new investment.
And if the committee wants to meet with any individual, if they call down to the business office, we'll be glad to meet with you. I want to try to get it right, you know what I mean? The more input you get from more people, I think the better chance to have it achieved.
In your mind, what would be the best outcome of this presentation of proposals to the council?
The best outcome was we would make progress as a community.
I mean, would it be a change in our master plan, a change in our ordinance?
It would have to be some of everything. I mean, you can't specifically nail it as one particular thing. There would have to be a change in the ordinance. There would have to be a change in the master plan. There would have to be communication between the committee, the board, the council, to try to make Highlands a better place to live, in a better place, in a better community. We can't do that if we don't have your assistance, and we don't have the assistance of the borough itself. This project was done to try to improve Highlands, and what we're trying to do is give you a lot of options, look at a vision that we've had, and get your input from that, and say, okay, we agree with this, we don't agree with that. For example, and you brought it up early, Bay Avenue is a long, long street. It will never be a true business downtown area, but let's make it as effective as we possibly can. I think that we have some parameters in the town that we really love. We have some parameters in the town that we'd like to change. And those things, we have to discuss them. We have to be able to look at them from a viewpoint of what's good today, but what's going to be good 25 years from today. I wasn't here 40 years ago, but the plan that was put together was not really a forward-thinking plan. But at that point in time, it was what the community wanted. For us to survive as a town of Highlands, we have to change our outlook, the way we do things, so we can make ourselves more attractive. And all you have to do is look at what's happened in Asbury Park, what's happened in
all the communities that are growing, they've made a commitment to change.
There's another perspective, I think, in terms of the way you look at your community. Growth isn't necessarily always a good thing. In the island of Nantucket, for instance, they don't allow a hell of a lot of things there. And it's an incredibly popular thing. Now, that's a poor comparison, probably. But it isn't a town that allows any kind of... Everybody has to have shingles. Everybody has to have white paint. Everybody has to have a lot of things. There's a lot of restriction. There are zoning ordinances that are very restrictive. And it's a very successful community.
We would like that.
And maybe Ocean Grove's a better situation. They're not. They're a town that is very interested in controlling their heritage and their environment, and they think that is the route towards a successful community. And maybe it doesn't address the taxes properly, but it is something that maybe taxes have to be addressed in another fashion.
I think that on both sides of this particular conversation, I think there's not a lot of places to grow in Highlands. There's not a lot of places to put things in, but I think we can make changes in what we do have so that we can make it more attractive for people to come in. And you can't do that under the set of circumstances and rules that we have today.
But given that we can't, it's already sort of built out, does it make sense to change the fabric of the town by introducing a completely different housing type and making that the standard of the industry instead of the single family home with the lot surrounding it, which has, it's already been established in this town?
I think that's an admirable statement, but in reality, if we do not increase the ratables in the community, we will not be an independent community. We will be absorbed by somebody else because we will not be able to fundamentally raise our taxes to pay for an independent town, because then everybody will move out and it will be something that no one wants to happen. I think you have to be forward enough thinking to say, wait a minute, we have to be able to look at this and say, what can we do that's going to be the best for the community 50 years from now, 40 years from now? We may not get it right, but 40 years ago, I think they made some mistakes in the community that has hurt us today. And we have to take that opportunity to look at it and maybe to, I'm not saying make a wholesale change. What I am saying is that you need to be able to be forward enough thinking to be able to say, we need to change some things. Is everything going to fly? No. Did everything fly in Asbury Park? No. Did everything fly in Long Branch or any place? No. But they have made the attempt to try to increase the value even in this particular economy, and I think we can increase the value of Highlands. If we do not raise more tax money in Highlands, we will not be an independent community. That's written in stone. And I don't think that if you look at it in any other way than that, I'm not saying that your thinking is wrong. I am saying that the community